barriers have, you know, with these, by getting entrenched in your position, you can put up barriers much more easily than you can find nuance that's going to be useful in your own practice. So I'm a type of person that I see most things from that community standpoint. That's mm-hmm. why I talk in terms of squee and enthusiasm, you know, and not just because, you know, my own technical chops might not be the bee's knees, but because that's what I think of first when a new package comes out. Even if I'm not, you know, for Emacs, I might not be excited to use it, but I'm thinking about who it's going to open, what parts of Emacs, you know, to whom it will open new parts of Emacs, what parts of Emacs are going to start seeing more use than they have, because now there's an API that, you know, aligns to a paradigm people already understand. That can be worth a lot more than, you know, tight code.
Just on things that are obviously programming languages. And a moment ago, you mentioned, like, if you're not really using SQL or SQL, as I think some people say, for your programming, you might be using some macro to generate all of your SQL. Just to a topic that I had kind of been planning to talk about was, so I've been playing with this macro package, common Lisp macro package called CL Series, which was due to Richard Waters. And I'm just getting to know this package, and it does very uncommon Lisp things. It's quite hard to use. And I found it really hard to write my good common Lisp so that CL Series will be able to optimize it. So it will take 100 lines and generate 1500 lines of kind of mysterious series optimized low level Lisp code. But the way I ended up doing this was actually by using a mixture of keyboard macros and Emacs Lisp inside Emacs. So I wasn't really using CL Series. CL Series was kind of taking the role of SQL that you'd never touch in my kind of exploration there. I forgot where I was going with this, but I felt that tied into you saying, well, are you ever going to really write all of this SQL directly, or are you going to generate it? And I was saying, well, yeah, in practice, my CL Series, I was doing a lot of generating of it from Emacs, though that has been helping me, as kind of learning was a theme of yours as well, helping me learn how CL Series actually thought I was going to do things when I looked at the kind of bizarre way I had to generate code to work. This actually kind of implied to me what Series wanted. Series is a lazy evaluation macro package for Common Lisp that was kind of associated with the first half of Richard Waters's career. Sorry, do you have anything else to say? I kind of petered out a little bit here.
No. That was interesting. I'm just sort of chewing on your strategy. I mean, my first thought is that sounds like the kind of thing I would do. I approach a lot of things that way, where I'll take an, you know, kind of a tedious approach from a data perspective, like an exhaustive data set, no intent to optimize, and then I'll add in the optimize with code gen step, right? And it's kind of anything but optimizing if you think about reducing things to a minimum number of steps. But I'm really just, you know, it's keep the machine simple. If the, you know, if the gears are big, that's fine, they're still circular.
Knuth and said just, premature optimization is what was that quote? Somebody will know. Maybe we can say premature optimization is the root of all evil there.
It's something like, yeah, the bane of the the well-organized system.
Yeah, you're right. I don't talk sufficiently similar to Knuth. I was calling Knuth Knuth for the longest time. So I have a question for MD Hughes, who we only have textually via LambdaMu, who's been saying very kind of deep and interesting things. in Paradise Sushi, where we're chattering away. Hello to Schroeder, who's joined in, and everyone else who's joining in as well. But MP Hughes, do you have a tool that sounds like what Corwin and I are basically getting from Emacs to kind of sort of cheatingly generate code when you come into a new situation, or like you're interacting with a new package and you only have a little bit of an understanding how this package works? But Corwin and I have this crutch in Emacs where once we understand a little bit, we can have Emacs Lisp just generate lots of what we understand kind of works. Do you, or does somebody else in LambdaMoo have a technique on this? Oh, Alex the Red is making a great pun on what the root of all eval is. Great, great pun. While we're waiting to see if people come back to us with their kind of meta programming strategies, including some non-Emacs users. I think Alex the Red actually uses Ed, one of those people. Oh, MD Hughes is saying MD Hughes does make code generators sometimes, mostly as Python scripts I run from Vim or whatever. In which case, yeah, you're basically introducing like Vim plus Python as a sort of Emacs plus Emacs.
That's really relatable. I do the same thing with Perl. Although, you know, to your point, screw Lisp, I very likely do it in Emacs Lisp as well, especially if the data set is already, you know, kind of looks like some consoles or whatever. But equally often just write something that kind of, you know, pre-processes a program, turns an input into an output in Perl, and then I'll have, you know, could even have a multi-stage assembly line, right, where that Perl program is writing is actually a bunch of SQL statements, DML statements that massage data in some tables, let's say.
Something not quite like this, but that MD Hughes does as well. So MD Hughes uses, they have a package, Marklib, sorry that I'm just gossiping about you, MD Hughes. So they port their package Marklib between all the languages that they're using. So whether they're in Objective-C or Shay Scheme or coming to visit Common Lisp with me, they port their kind of low-level libraries so that their other kind of code generation stuff based on their library will still work. And so their library kind of homogenizes. They just have to port the library, and then their usual techniques work anywhere that library has been ported to. I may have got that right or wrong. MD Hughes is giving an example of chicken's lack of a good define record type. Yeah. So one other topic, just to kind of wildly jump topic, was during the last week, when I thought I would have more time to do it. Do you know Yukari, Corwin, just out of interest, or Shinmura?
I don't think so.
Yeah. So she's a Common Lisp person rather than Emacs person, I think. But she has quite a fancy kind of 3D and high performance, but in Common Lisp game engine. And she was trying to get her characters' mouths to move when dialogue audio was playing. And I kind of foolishly promised her that she could just convolve a bunch of voice audio chirps with an audio sample to determine yes or no whether speech was actually happening in that audio sample. And I think I slightly oversold how easy this was going to be, and I just wanted to mention it on the show in case somebody listening or somebody in one of these chats could help us with that, or help me with that. I believe I was right. I got kind of technical this week going into Fourier transform stuff already, so I was hoping somebody would be able to point I guess, at Shinmura at timoon.eu somewhere. Would be Shinmura on the Mastodon. Where are you actually on the Mastodon, Corwin? Are you normally on there? You're normally on IRC.
That's right. I do have a couple of Mastodon accounts. I'm on hostux.social. I help with the FSF Out of Band updates account there, but I also got my own account named Corwin. And then I also have an account on knock.social.
Oh, yeah. So this was the one I accidentally, you know, I just typed at Corwin into the web interface and I ended up at the knock.social one, which it's
social media's got real toxic. I've been on the kind of Fediverse stuff for a while, but not really paying that much attention to it. I've also not been paying much attention to commercial proprietary social media. I sort of stuck my head back in there and it reminded me, oh yeah, Mastodon's so much better. It just is. Mm-hmm.
Like you're being on a responsible Mastodon server kind of does a lot of work for you as well. Well, when I say it does a lot of work for you, the long suffering admins of your Mastodon instance
absolutely
do a lot of work for you.
As a FSF sysadmin, right? Somebody patching servers and looking at, you know, demons falling over or whatever, you know, I'm well aware what kind of work goes into that. Nothing is free. You know, if you're using Facebook and, you know, you're benefiting by the many thousands of system engineers that are working to keep that infrastructure online, the software engineers keeping that up, and it's no different with something like Mastodon. Really shows off the tool chain really from conception to delivery, just in terms of how all the work is done, you know, with the best traditions of open science in mind, public mailing lists and thoughtful discussions. You know, no design team is perfect, right? We're not always going to like every decision that gets made, but knowing, I mean, it's the rare Fortune 500 ISO managed company that can manage as transparent a design process, even to come up with the wrong answer.
Brontark over in Lambdamu was remembering C preprocessor macros to us, which I guess a lot of the GNU operating system Linux is written in C, isn't it? So it's kind of inevitable that somebody is thinking about these C preprocessor macros. I guess lots of things are written in C. Have you done?
It's been a while. Yeah. So I have a lifelong project. I started playing this role-playing game. Which was eventually popularized under the brand name Dungeons and Dragons, but it goes back kind of older than that, and a bunch of the ideas that became that game were kind of stolen from some, you know, local gaming communities at the college scene in the Midwest. And so, you know, I have friends of friends that are, you know, were friends with Gygax or whomever, right, and have their own pen and paper versions of these antique games. That's what I grew up playing, as these, you know, takes pad of graph paper and a couple six-siders, and that's the recipe, right? And so I think of, you know, 20-sided dice and 8-sided dice and needing a whole collection of many different sided dice as like this elitist innovation designed to make it harder for kids to invent their own content. But what I really, you know, resent is the idea that, you know, you're going to sell me a pamphlet on dragons and without that my game won't have any, like, that's nuts. So the idea of Dungeon is to be kind of a, you know, a simple set of rules that are, you know, take 10-20 minutes to teach and, you know, a couple hours to write your own game, and in an evening you can kind of put together your own campaign and play it through, or you can, you know, put more effort into the game and have, you know, write a dungeon that will yield years worth of puzzle solving and so forth.
So this was a super interesting direction to suddenly go here. I just want to mention we had Perry wandering around in Lambdamu a while ago, where Perry, I think, is the maybe fulcrum player of the current Lambda RPG system inside Lambda, which just kind of relates to what you were saying. I was also just wanting to poke MD Hughes, who's been a kind of RPG video game developer for a few decades. MD Hughes, do you have something more interesting to say to or ask Corwin in this direction? So one of the programs that MD Hughes was writing, MD Hughes came to write some CLIM, so Common Lisp Interface Manager, Common Lisp, which was the topic of my Emacs Conf talk. And where was I? What was I about to say? Something.
Okay, well, that'll let me connect dots. So in any case, some early versions of my dungeon work were written in C, and then I started learning C++ and started moving them there. When I learned Perl, I started, rewriting parts of it there. It actually, as I've been rewriting it for the last about 3-4 years, I've been working on building it inside Emacs. And that's been really successful just because mm-hmm. code as data, data as code is a very natural fit. Plus the ability to render out the maps with Fog of War was a big technical challenge that was just trivially easy within Emacs using its bindings to the RSVG library.
MD Hughes is just saying yes. Welcome to the club of RPG writing. So I guess from my perspective, you two are actually surprisingly similar in the direction that we went here. Then MDH is giving us some history. D10, D20s were around for Tractics and similar games, but yes, nobody else used
the D20s were for the mechanized warfare and the mech games. And you'd have hex printed tablecloths that were basically just tablecloths taken over by gamers, right? And those would show up on the tables of the Kaufman, of the student union and Saturday morning. And those people would have one game, and then there'd be the fantasy gamers, kind of off in a corner by themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the heart of the armpit smelling heart of gamer culture in my mind.
Hughes is just continuing, getting a bag of numbered polys was why it was so expensive. I'm from the tunnels and trolls, six-sider based lifestyle.
And it's got to come with its own, like in the color printing that they did on the book there, they did everything possible to justify a $25 sticker price for that game in 1980, which is just, which was a heartbreaking thing when they, the game, they really stole it.
You don't happen to know Nasreddin Edaj, do you, who has just dropped in the Moo? I'm avoiding the comments people are making about C's macro pre-processing, sorry. But yes, welcome, Edaj. Edaj is my usual... She lets me know the history of using Emacs from a kind of practical direction. Edaj is also one of the wizards of Lambda here. So, she was
good.
She's, I guess, a Lisp user from Harlequin and those sort of companies.
Oh, forgive me, I'm just getting over a little bit of a flu here, so forgive my cough.
Yeah. Let's just say thank you for being here to some of these people. Nerf is saying Villains and Vigilantes was one of their favorite RPGs. Can I ask you, and probably this is kind of an eye-rolling question, and so you do on one hand, great kind of GNU sysops work, and on the other hand, you also do this kind of very kind of rich substrate-ish RPG work with Dungeon, as you've just been saying. Mm-hmm. Is there a secret underlying connection between game substrates and please go with that if you can.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's a tie that binds, right? So with Dungeon, you know, the thing that makes it difficult to build this game, right, that sort of stymied me decade after decade as I learned new programming languages and threw them at this problem, is just how whatever you want it to be things are. And that was kind of the breakthrough with realizing that, you know, Emacs Lisp as being kind of a user-defined programming language, you know, redefine the fundamental functions that compose it, even if you want to, right, is kind of perfect to have people build up the mechanization that they want into their own games, with a real focus being on not making the underlying data, the story of the game that's being played, the list of things your character possesses, the things that are in the room with the party right now and what they're doing, right? These, when we're on a tabletop, these things end up being drawn onto graph paper in front of us. When we pick up our notes and we walk away for the evening, we carry them with us. There are our lore and our materials, right? And what I don't want to do with the game is lock those into a vault where now Corwin is an important party to me ever having access to them again. Mm-hmm. Hey, Corwin, what database table was that in? I don't want anything like that. So by focusing on org mode, that's keeping everything just in this basic narrative form and putting the work on the technology to use that as if it were more structured data, and to use that, you know, whatever notes the player is keeping, dig them out, dig out the parts that are game relevant, plug them into the, you know, whatever automations there might be. So that's kind of the core concept of the engine. If I think about you know, my more general approach to technology, you know, that's also how I'm doing it, right? I talked about assembly lines, you know, that might be sort of Rube Goldbergian, where there's several steps, you know, do this and that produces a program, and you run that program and that produces some SQL, and then you run the SQL and the data is good. Okay. And, you know, that type of assembly line, that's also sort of similar to how I manage. I've got a large amount of data. My wife and I do video production projects. We did a small film a few years ago. We like to do music videos for our friends who are musicians. We just got a large, and then we have five kids and five cats as well. So our photography, you know, we got photographs from decades and decades, and a lot of data around here. Our own practices, we recorded all sorts of things. So managing that and deciding what's going to be online, what's going to be in colder storage, and so on, is a whole process. Keeping up with backups for our large family. So all of the kind of routine technology maintenance things. And so as an operational person, I know that repeatability equals reliability. Right. So it's more important to have a process that I can teach one of the kids how to do, so I'm not the only person who does it, than it is for me to have a process that's absolutely the, you know, the kind of shining example that I'm proud to write a blog post about and have, you know, my peers from FSF or whomever read.
One example, so from what I was doing with Ceres recently, I was trying to map LambdaMoo room digging onto my, I was writing a Winograd fast Fourier transform, or trying to generate Winograd fast Fourier transforms, which are a kind of fast Fourier transform. I really wanted them to be rooms that you go through, in a moo that you can kind of explore the flow going through these rooms. But I was doing this because, like, in a game where I guess you refer to people in LambdaMoo, for example, as players, it's very easy to draw a map and map where players have kind of flowed through in a game. And I really wanted to capture that into me trying to write a, like, this kind of aggressively optimizing fast Fourier transform.
Yeah, that's a cool macro. Yeah.
It would be so cool.
Uh-huh. It kind of, have you read the book Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson?
Somebody's recommended that I do that before, but I haven't actually read it yet.
You bring that book to mind. Just he's got in that particular story, he's got a really unique way of kind of visualizing. I'll just borrow his term and say cyberspace, right? A little bit of cheating there, but we'll go with it. And I mean that just kind of brings it to mind. I like the direction you're thinking along. I find those kinds of things extremely helpful. In fact, you know, be watching something like Grey's Anatomy and they'll do one of those 3D, you know, motion breakaways. Now we're inside the body and we're watching the process of the pathogen, working on the cell walls or whatever is going on. And those types of visualization techniques, although they're completely out of context, you know, in the cinematic form from my work, I find that's very useful. I see something like that and I find it, find myself applying it to my own work. And when I see, you know, even something as like a plant UML or something, you know, somebody, the way that's kind of figured out to model the logic of a piece of software in a new way, that although it's much less grandiose perhaps than visualizing fast barrier, can be a very powerful tool to just ground the knowledge or even to get your head around it for the first time.
We had Larry Macinter here a couple of weeks ago, and in the 70s he managed to do this, but specifically for I think Lisp 360 and then Interlisp. He wrote MasterScope that did turn programs into kind of inspectable graphs, and I guess the way I was visualizing. What was the book? Something Crash?
Snow Crash by Neil Stephenson. Yeah. He's also got a book called Cryptonomicon, which I consider something of a must read. Even Dee read it. She does read a bunch of science fiction, but she has no particular interest in technology.
I'll add those to my reading list.
Yeah, Neil Stephenson is one of those kind of can do no wrong authors for me, although I wouldn't say I like all of his books. They're all pretty interesting. The ones I don't like, I think that's on me.
over in Lambdamu, people were asking what fast Fourier transforms were, and then other people answered in a way that I'm not capable of right now, at least. Foolsbane is also highly recommending Snow Crash, so I know there were a few much, and MDH also. So it sounds like a bunch of great people are kind of converging on these topics. Let's just quickly say thank you to everyone who's here. Idaj, Frangelico, Schroeder, Foolsbane, Gibberish, Guest, Alex the Red, MDH, Jazzmaz, Nerf, Brontark, Screwtape, Being Yours Truly, Ratsu, Zilt, Jalamoth, and of course, everyone. Oh, the Gibson on the Mastodon also likes this Cryptonomicon. Oh, there was a book club meeting there with the Gibson, Craig Maloney, and MDH reading Cryptonomicon, you just mentioned as well. Idaj also likes Snow Crash. She thinks Stevenson's endings are kind of weak, though, and has not yet read Cryptonomicon. I still haven't read Murderbots was the next one on my reading list, but I'll get to Snow Crash and the Cryptonomicon after that. All right. Thank you, everyone. And thank you so much for being here. Corwin, would you like to just say something for a minute at the end of the show here?
Sure. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, for joining us. Thank you, Screwlisp, for having me, to all my peers and comrades on the Emacs Conference organizing committee and all our volunteers, speakers, and everybody else that makes the conference so amazing, the volunteers of the Free Software Society that provide us with the infrastructure and help out with that, and a lot of volunteering opportunities. I'll also mention the Free Software Society is doing their annual fundraiser right now. We're just a little bit short of our $400,000 goal, which is, I'll just stump for it. I'm hoping this year they'll be able to hire a third full-time technology staff. They're one of the things that we do just to kind of keep things as clear on the up and up as possible. There's you know, there's real limits on what the volunteers can do. You know, I'm not in there looking at people's paperwork that they submit, mm-hmm. copyright assignments. Those are things that really only the staff are empowered to do. So it's
these. Can you these help me same... put these together on the Mastodon to boost at sure. the end of the show?
Yeah, I'll ship you a couple of links here in just a minute.
Thank you. All right, and thank you very much, Corwin. All right. I think we
And I guess I'll say also thanks a lot to all the people that contribute to Emacs. It's just a wonderful tool. I use it every single day. Every day it's teaching me stuff. Thanks.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.